Before we were shot down, Jimmy Payton and I had leave. We were transferring from a refresher course at Newmarket after our pilot got killed to, that's the transition. They gave us 10 days at Newmarket. Then we got a day or two off, and then we had to report to 419 Squadron. And Jimmy and I went to London, and we bought ourselves a bicycle each. It's pretty handy to get around in airdromes.
Yeah.
A bicycle. So anyway, we took them back up to Mildenhall, and we met our new crew and Art Crichton. And so we practiced a little bit, and then we did our first trip together. And, you know, we're a green crew. Jimmy and I were the old guys in it.
Oh, wow.
But, and then the second trip, we were being sent to Hamburg. And we took off, but we didn't take off. We were the first on the battle order.
Okay.
And we had instrument trouble. So they told us to pull off and let the other 12 aircraft, and we'd be number 13.
Oh, boy.
And Jimmy Payton and I were on our 13th trip. And Jimmy said to me, this doesn't look good. So anyway, we got going towards Hamburg. We hadn't got there. And there was lots of flak around. I don't remember getting hit, but suddenly we had an engine on fire. And they worked and got it out. And the other engine started to burn.
Holy.
And they got it out, so then Crichton said, well, throw out everything we don't need and we'll try and get home on one engine. So we threw out everything we didn't need, and
wow.
Next thing I knew, but when you're doing that and you're working, your plug come out of my intercom, and
yeah,
you're throwing your guns and taking them out and stuff. And I remember Mike William tapping me on the head, so then I put my intercom on. I says, is that bailed out? He said, get going.
Holy.
Wow.
So we bailed out, and the aircraft blew up before it hit the ground. Oh. It was burning. And Art told me, he said, I looked down that Wellington, looked down the aircraft, and in the Wellington, at the back end, there's quite a step down, and then it goes on to the rear turret.
Okay.
And what we figured was that Dick had made a mistake. He must have got a little excited or something. Instead of going out head first, which you're supposed to do, you just go out head first and you're spinning on your ripcord, he went out feet first.
Oh.
And when you get your feet out, your parachute flips up here and you can't get your feet back in. But he was invisible from Art. So he went down with the aircraft.
Oh, wow. Dear.
But we should have all got out because we had time.
And then what happened directly after that?
Pardon?
And then what happened once you hit the ground? Like you parachuted out?
Well, I could see water here and water here, and I think I'm coming down in water, and I could see a little, looked like a highway, a road down there.
Okay.
And I bailed out somewhere around 10,000 feet.
Wow.
And the other fellows are all just behind me because the front gunner goes first.
Okay.
And we'd had our drills, we all knew what we had to do. And you keep pulling your parachute this way and then that way. And when I got down to that road, it was a railroad. And there was water both sides.
Wow.
And I could see some buildings and stuff, but not too far away. So I got rid of my parachute in one of the water ditches. And I started to walk, and then, boy, there's some buildings. And I stopped and I looked, and then a door opened. Two Germans in uniform came out.
Oh.
And they knew that there was an aircraft down, I guess. And to hear them, see them looking around. And so I turned around and went the other way. I just stayed perfectly still till they'd gone back in.
Oh, okay.
Then I walked the other way. And I finally found a field about daylight with a little shed in the middle. So I thought, well, I'll just get in that little shed in the middle. They won't be looking for a guy there. But long in the afternoon, one of the equivalent to our home guard,
okay,
around with a rifle and a bayonet. He came walking across, and I got up right in the top, thought, well, he'll just look in.
Yeah.
And he saw me.
Oh.
And scared him worse than scared me. But anyway.
And did you know what happened to your crew, like, while you were hiding? Like, while you...
No.
Okay.
So he took me up to a farmhouse, marched me up to a farmhouse.
Okay.
And they phoned the Air Force. And the woman at the farmhouse, she was, smiled at me and was kind of friendly. And she pointed to a picture of the Christ child and Mary.
Oh,
and
wow.
The Christ child on the wall. And she went like this to me. I thought she'd ask me, am I a Christian? So I said, yeah. And she went and got some black bread and some jam and gave me, and I hadn't had anything to eat, so
wow.
Left England. So, and then in comes a car and the Air Force officer, and he had a real American twang. And he said, I spent 3 years in Kansas. And he put on his American twang just
for you.
For me, anyway. But, and pretty soon, they took me to a spot, and then Jimmy Payton came in, and then they picked them all up.
Oh.
And the other five of us got all put together.
Yeah.
And then we were put on a train and sent down to Dulag Luft, which is down in the south part of Germany.
Okay.
And that's a reception for airmen when you get there, and they interrogate you and try you for everything, you know. But we'd been well schooled. They told us just to give our name and number, and anything else you tell them, they don't get it.
Were you happy to see the rest of your crew when you got reunited with them?
And only Jimmy Payton said, I saw you. I was quite a bit heavier than Jimmy.
Okay.
And he said, I saw you going down faster than I was. But none of us saw each other, so the Germans brought us together.
Yeah. And then when you were at the camp, you all got under the same building? Were you all in the same building?
Well, yeah, but they put us in isolation.
Oh.
A room apiece.
Okay.
That helps make people talk, you know. You spend 24 hours all alone.
Yeah.
And but anyway, and the nicest English-speaking guy comes in with a RAF uniform, talks to you, you know, and he's a German, and you know it. We've been told to expect it. And he goes to interrogate you as if I'm one of you. But we knew him. So he didn't get much from us.
But he was wearing a Royal Air Force uniform.
Yeah.
Wow.
Interrogate us.
Did you get fed? Like, or did you have no rations? Like, when you got to the camp? Were you fed food? Did you have a meal when you were there?
Oh, yeah.
Or did they keep you?
We were there for a while.
Yeah.
And it wasn't too bad for food. But then they loaded us into, not bus cars, but they put us into a passenger train, I guess.
Okay.
It had a seat here and a seat there for about 8 or 9 people. And they put 16 of us in there. So, and now we haven't got room to lay down or anything. And we spent 4 days or 5 days going from there to, it's now Poland.
Okay.
Right beside Auschwitz.
So, were you still in your same outfit? You were still in your uniform?
Except they take your flying boots and
stuff
and give you something for a substitute because they could use them again.
Wow.
So there was a time when you first got to Stalingrad where they tied you up.
Well,
we have pictures in the pictures you gave us show some guys.
Well, we were in there for, you see, that was April of 42. And then Dieppe came.
Okay.
And that was a fiasco. And all the chaps at Dieppe, I shouldn't say all, but a big bunch of Canadians that were at Dieppe, were all taken to 8B. And they went into what we call the Russian compound because it used to be Russians, and they moved them out and made it for us guys.
Yeah.
And the Dieppe boys came into that compound, and there was just two fences between us, and about, I don't know, 16 feet of space between. And so we were able to visit back and forth. And then the order came in that they were all to be tied up. So those guys all got tied up, and we in the Air Force, we said, oh, we used to holler across, they'll take them off for you for Christmas. But it was only two, 3 days later, and the order came through that the Air Force were all to be tied up too.
Wow.
And they were cords, just, and boy, they put them on, and some of them were tight, and they were very strict at that time. Your hands would swell up, and you couldn't do anything until, when they saw it, their hands were swelling, they'd loosen them off for you. And we wore that for, I don't know, several weeks. Then one day a truck came into the compound, lifted its hoist and dumped out, I don't know, 11, hundreds of guys in there. I don't know how many shackles they needed, but they were all handcuffs made in England.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they dropped them off. And then we had the handcuffs, and they had a chain about that long. And you could.
So you could still.
We got so we all walked like this, and you went for exercise and so on. And if it wasn't real cold, that wasn't bad. But when it was cold, you can't get your gloves. You've got that space in the metal. Oh. My hands used to swell up after I got home. I got some dirty, wet, cold job. My hands would swell up till I couldn't put gloves on. I wore mitts.
Yeah.
But it went away.
Yeah. Hmm.